Picture this for a second. You are sitting in a pharmacy parking lot with a screaming toddler who just spiked a sudden fever. You aren't, you know, leisurely browsing an email newsletter.
No, absolutely not. You're in a panic.
Right. You aren't mulling over some billboard you saw 3 weeks ago. You are typing pediatric urgent care open now into your phone, and you need an answer immediately.
Like right this second.
Exactly. That is a radically compressed, incredibly high-stakes decision. And the data backing this up is honestly staggering. Fully 88% of local mobile searches result in a call or a visit within 24 hours.
It's wild. That 88% figure, I mean, it completely shatters how most businesses think about marketing.
Well, welcome to the deep dive. Today, we are unpacking a really comprehensive exploration into the hidden digital machinery that dictates exactly why you choose the doctor you do. And I want to mention right up front, this whole mission is made possible thanks to information from Socopic Studios.
Yeah, and getting back to that 88% stat, it just shifts the entire mindset. You're moving from, like, building a long-term brand awareness to basically operating an emergency beacon.
Right.
Yet, a shocking number of medical practices still treat their digital presence like a casual storefront, you know, rather than a critical point of triage.
It's so true. I mean, we all know about the local pack, right?
Yeah.
That map block with the three specific results at the very top of a Google search.
Building real estate.
Exactly. We know those three spots completely bypass the standard organic web links. But what is truly staggering is the math behind who actually captures those spots. Google designs based on this trifecta. Proximity, which is just how close you, the patient, are. Relevance, meaning how well the practice matches your search terms. And prominence, which is this measure of digital trust.
That's the big one. Prominence.
Okay, let's unpack this. Because proving your prominence as a healthcare provider has to be a completely different beast than, say, ranking for a local coffee shop.
Oh, totally. The stakes literally alter the algorithm's requirements. I mean, think about it. If Google recommends a bad coffee shop, you lose $5 and have a bitter taste in your mouth.
Right. You move on with your day.
Yeah. But if Google recommends an unqualified specialist or a clinic that closed 3 months ago, the physical and financial consequences for you are massive.
Oh, yeah.
Because of that, the trust signals required to rank a medical practice are infinitely more rigorous.
That actually brings up a really fascinating contradiction about the digital front door of a practice. Logically, you would think that if you drop like $10,000 or $15,000 on a flawless custom medical website, you know, with drone footage of your waiting room and interactive patient portals, you'd expect that to be the main driver of new patients.
You would think so.
Wait, you're telling me that glossy, expensive site gets routinely beaten by a basic Google map listing?
Every single time. I mean it. A Google Business Profile, or GBP, is the absolute foundation of local search. If that profile is neglected or, you know, inaccurate, your expensive website is essentially invisible in that local environment.
That is crazy to think about.
It is, but a mediocre website with a perfectly optimized Google Business Profile will absolutely siphon patients away from a state-of-the-art website with a neglected profile. It all comes down to friction.
Make it easy for the patient.
Exactly. The patient wants your operating hours, your physical location, a button to call you, and your reviews. And they want all of that without having to click like three layers deep into a website menu.
And the review aspect is brutal. There's a specific stat in the sources here that says 53% of patients will not even consider a provider with a rating below 4 stars.
More than half. Just gone.
Right. I want you, the listener, to think about your own habits for a second. When was the last time you looked past the star rating on a medical clinic before deciding to trust them with your health? I know for a fact I immediately filter out anything with a 3 in front of it.
Oh, that psychological filtering is immediate, and it is ruthless. It really doesn't matter if the doctor is a Harvard-educated pioneer in their field.
Yeah.
If their Google Business Profile shows, say, 3.2 stars, maybe, because the front desk staff was notoriously rude to 5 people back in 2019, a massive portion of prospective patients will never even read the doctor's credentials.
They just keep scrolling.
Exactly. They just keep scrolling. And since 94% of all healthcare reviews are written directly on Google, your GBP isn't just an SEO tool. It is your primary reputation platform.
There's also this split in how we actually search for care, which creates this unique hurdle. I mean, I might look for the clinic itself, or I might look up a specific doctor my friend recommended.
Right. That dual search behavior requires a dual digital strategy. A patient typing Riverside Dermatology is a fundamentally different search query than Dr. James Park Dermatologist.
So what do you do?
To capture both, Practices actually need separate, distinct profiles for the overarching clinic, as well as independent profiles for every single practitioner working inside that clinic. You have to maximize the digital surface area you occupy in those map results.
Okay, so you build the house, the Google business profile. But how does Google verify the house isn't just a cardboard movie set? How does an algorithm actually know Dr. Park is practicing medicine at that physical address?
What's fascinating here is that Google is inherently paranoid.
I like that.
It's true. It doesn't just take the data you input into your profile at face value. It acts as a digital detective. It scours the entire internet to cross-reference your name, address, and phone number, what the industry calls the NAP.
NAP. Got it.
Right. And every single time your NAP is mentioned on another website, that is considered a citation.
Okay, so it's like having your middle initial on your driver's license, but leaving it off your passport. Yeah. To a human TSA agent at the airport, it's obviously the same person. They look at your face, look at the IDs, and make the cognitive leap.
Yeah.
But a bureaucratic algorithm can't do that. It just sees conflicting data strings and throws a massive red flag.
That bureaucratic rigidity is exactly how the algorithm functions. If your practice is listed as Dr. Chen's Family Medicine on your official website, but Chen Family Medicine LLC on Health Grades and Chen Medical Group on Yelp, that inconsistency severely suppresses your local rankings.
Wow, just from slight name variations.
Yeah, the algorithm loses confidence in your legitimacy, and patients do the exact same thing. Nearly 68% of them will actively check if your information matches across different platforms.
That makes sense.
If the phone numbers conflict, they just assume you've moved or closed down, and they call a competitor.
And patients aren't just checking Yelp or Apple Maps. The hierarchy of where these citations live is a massive piece of the puzzle here.
Right. General business directories like Apple Maps or the Better Business Bureau are classified as Tier 2.
Okay.
They matter for general visibility, sure. But the Tier 1 directories, platforms like HealthGrades, ZocDoc, Vitals, and WebMD, those carry disproportionate weight in healthcare.
Because they're medically focused.
Exactly. Google's algorithm essentially piggybacks on their authority. Because those Tier 1 platforms have strict medical verification processes, Google assumes that if your data is perfectly consistent across them, you are a legitimate, trustworthy provider.
But maintaining that perfect consistency brings us to a really hidden danger mentioned in the sources, the data aggregators. Companies like Axiom or Factual.
Oh, the aggregators. Yeah, these are the massive invisible databases operating behind the scenes. They automatically syndicate business information out to hundreds of smaller niche directories all across the web.
It's essentially a contaminated water supply.
That is the perfect way to describe it.
Because if one of these central aggregators has your old phone number from 3 years ago, you can't just go around scrubbing the individual sinks, the tiny directories. It's totally useless.
Right.
Because the dirty data just keeps flowing downstream, automatically repopulating the wrong number. You have to fix it at the reservoir.
And there's a very specific, devastating version of this bad data problem in healthcare, the insurance directory trap.
Right. If your website proudly states you take Blue Cross, but the Blue Cross patient portal says you don't, well, you've just created a digital dead end.
Exactly. Patients filter their searches heavily by insurance networks. A mismatch in data means one of two disasters happens. Either the patient filters you out and never sees your clinic in the first place.
Which is bad enough.
Or, worse, they show up, receive treatment, and get hit with a massive out-of-network bill.
Oh, that is a nightmare.
The reputational damage and the furious one-star reviews that follow that kind of surprise bill are almost impossible to recover from.
Okay, so you fix the map listing, you clean up the contaminated data aggregators, and you realize you desperately need more five-star reviews to build that prominence we talked about. Here's where it gets really interesting.
Oh, the HIPAA rules.
Yes. Because tracking where your patients come from and asking them to leave those reviews hits a massive federal wall.
The IPAA minefield. This is where standard, everyday marketing advice completely falls apart. Yeah. I mean, let's look at basic website tracking, like standard Google Analytics. In e-commerce, selling shoes, it's harmless. In healthcare, it can be a severe violation.
I mean, how does a standard analytics tool that just counts website visitors violate health privacy laws?
It all comes down to how URLs are structured and tracked. Imagine a patient logs into their online portal to view their lab results.
Okay.
And the URL generated in their browser reads something like /patient-portal/diabetes-management.
Oh, I see where this is going.
Yeah. If standard Google Analytics tracks that specific URL and associates it with the user's IP address, your website has just transmitted protected health information, PHI, directly to Google.
Yes.
Unless you have a formal business associate agreement or BAA in place with your analytics provider, you are breaking the law.
So how does a marketing manager track anything without committing a federal crime? The text mentioned server-side tagging. Mm-hmm. What actually is that?
Think of server-side tagging as a trusted middleman. Instead of the patient's internet browser sending their browsing data directly to Google servers, the browser sends it to your clinic's private secure server first.
Okay, so it stays in-house.
Right. Your server acts as a filter. It strips out any sensitive clinical identifiers, like the word diabetes or the personal IP address, and then forwards only the anonymized behavioral data to Google Analytics.
That makes perfect sense. It scrubs the data before it ever leaves the building. And from what I read, the rules for actually acquiring reviews are just as rigid. I mean, if I run a local bakery, the best practice is personalization.
Hey, Sarah, hope you loved your blueberry muffin today. Please leave us a review. But doing that in healthcare.
You just broadcasted their medical reality to a third-party platform. You absolutely cannot say, "Hi, Sarah, thank you for coming in for your diabetes consultation. We hope your A1C results were reassuring. Please leave a review."
Even though as a marketer, that's exactly what you'd want to do to sound friendly. Right, but a compliant review request has to be entirely detached from any clinical context. It must be triggered strictly by an appointment completion status in the scheduling software, never by the reason for the visit.
So what could you say?
It should simply say, "Thank you for visiting us today. We'd appreciate it if you'd share your experience." That is the absolute maximum level of detail allowed.
And the frustration for doctors who are trying to defend themselves publicly is palpable. If someone leaves a scathing review saying, "Dr. Smith completely ignored my knee pain and was incredibly rude," Dr. Smith's hands are totally tied.
Professionally, it is agonizing. The doctor might desperately want to reply, "I didn't ignore your knee pain. We spent 45 minutes looking at your MRI discussing your torn meniscus."
But they can't.
Not under HIPAA. When responding to public reviews, you cannot even confirm or deny that the person complaining is actually a patient. You certainly cannot reference any details of their diagnosis or care, even if it proves you were 100% right.
You just have to absorb the hit in public. Acknowledge the concern, provide a direct phone number for the patient experience team, and force the conversation offline.
That's the only safe play.
Let's pivot slightly. Assuming a practice navigates the HIPAA review rules and their citations are perfectly clean, patients are finally clicking through to the actual website. But if the actual words on the page sound like a medical textbook, you lose them anyway.
This highlights the massive disconnect between clinical terminology and patient panic. A specialized surgeon naturally wants to highlight their expertise, right?
Sure.
They might demand their website be optimized for arthroscopic meniscectomy, because that is the precise billing code accurate procedure they perform.
But the guy sitting on his couch with an ice pack on his leg at 2 a.m. doesn't know what an arthroscopic meniscectomy is. He's typing "knee pain specialist near me."
Precisely. You have to map your content to the high intent vocabulary the patient actually uses. Skin doctor instead of dermatologist. But, and this is crucial, you have to balance that accessible language with algorithmic authority. Google places healthcare into a strict category called YMYL, your money or your life.
Meaning the stakes are simply too high for the search engine to index bad advice.
Exactly. If a cooking blog gives you a terrible recipe, your dinner is ruined. If a medical website gives you inaccurate cardiology advice, you could end up in the emergency room.
Right.
Because of that, Google strictly enforces EEAT standards: experience, expertise, authoritativeness, and trustworthiness. You cannot just hire a cheap freelance writer to churn out generic articles about heart health.
It has to be legit.
Yeah. Thin, generic medical content will actively harm your credibility. The content must be authored or explicitly reviewed by licensed providers, and it needs to cite credible clinical literature.
Doing this for a solo dental practice is one thing, but scaling this up for a massive regional hospital system must be a complete logistical nightmare.
The scale alters the strategy completely. A hospital doesn't just need one good map listing. They need department-level profiles. The emergency room needs a distinctly separate profile from the outpatient imaging center.
Oh, that makes sense.
Yeah, if someone is having a medical emergency and searches for the ER, you cannot have Google routing them to the billing office on the other side of the campus just because the map pins were lazily merged.
And then you factor in provider turnover. Doctors move to different states, they retire, they jump to competing clinics. What happens to their digital footprint?
They leave behind what we call ghost profiles. A doctor leaves your clinic, but their individual Google business profile and all those tier one directory listings just linger on the internet.
Like digital clutter.
Worse than clutter. A patient searches for that specific doctor, finds the old profile, calls your clinic, and your receptionist says, oh, they don't work here anymore.
And then what?
That patient doesn't typically ask to see someone else at your practice. They hang up and call the competitor down the street. Aggressively hunting down and closing those ghost profiles is literally a full-time job.
And we have to talk about how the nature of the search itself is changing. People aren't just typing keywords into a bar anymore. 32% of patients now use voice search to find a healthcare provider, and voice searches for doctor's office near me are growing by 50% year over year.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, voice queries fundamentally change the input. They're conversational. You don't dictate Siri, dermatologist, Austin, Texas. You ask a full question. Siri, who is the best dermatologist near me that takes Blue Cross?
And Siri has to pull that highly specific answer from the digital ether.
It pulls it directly from the technical SEO signals we've been discussing. The voice assistant checks your Google business profile operating hours to answer open now queries, and it scrapes your website for FAQ schema markup to answer the insurance question.
Wait, let's clarify. FAQ schema markup. Is that just a page on your website with a list of frequently asked questions?
No, it's much deeper than the visible text. Schema markup is a specific type of code you inject into the back end of your website. It acts as a direct translator for search engine bots.
Okay, how so?
It takes human-readable text, like your list of accepted insurances, and explicitly flags it for the algorithm, basically saying, hey, this specific block of text is the exact answer to questions about Blue Cross. It spoon-feeds the bot.
That makes perfect sense. And this spoon-feeding ties right into the AI shift. The sources state that 84% of medical searches now generate a Google AI overview. The term being used to combat this is generative engine optimization, or GEO. I have to admit, GEO sounds like just another trendy marketing acronym. Does an AI actually read a website differently than the traditional Google algorithm?
It really does. Traditional SEO looks for keyword density and backlinks to rank 10 blue links on a page. GEO is optimizing for a generative AI model that is actively synthesizing information to write a conversational, single-paragraph answer.
So the AI is doing the reading for you.
Right. And to be cited as a source by that AI, your data has to be structured flawlessly. The AI won't recommend your clinic if your directory citations conflict or your schema markup is broken, because the AI model's primary goal is to avoid looking foolish by generating a hallucinated or incorrect answer.
So what does this all mean? We've unpacked the algorithms, the high play hurdles, the transition to AI overviews, but let's talk about the bottom line. This is a business. What is the actual cost of doing this right versus the cost of remaining digitally invisible?
Building and maintaining this infrastructure requires serious resources. Entry-level management just handling the map listing and fixing citations might run $300 to $800 a month.
Okay.
But for those enterprise hospital systems dealing with ghost profiles, department-level mapping, and medically reviewed content, it's easily $2,000 to over $6,000 a month.
That is a heavy operational cost. But the ROI calculus laid out in the research is undeniable. If the lifetime value of a single new patient is between $2,000 and $5,000, capturing just 3 to 5 extra patients a month covers an entire enterprise-level system. The math justifies the investment almost immediately.
It does, but patience and the right metrics are required.
Oh,
you
yeah.
Can't just look at the raw clicks inside your Google Business dashboard, because that doesn't tell you where you actually rank on the map. You need specialized tools to measure your share of local voice, or SOLV.
Which tells you what, exactly?
It maps out a geographic grid around your clinic and shows you the exact percentage of time your practice appears in the top 3 results across that specific physical area.
That's incredibly specific.
It is. And you have to understand the timelines. Cleaning up your map listings might yield a bump in visibility in 2 to 6 weeks. But building algorithmic trust through authoritative, medically reviewed content takes 6 to 12 months of compounding consistent effort.
It's not a light switch, it's a flywheel. Which leaves me with a final, somewhat provocative thought based on the rise of those AI overviews. We started this deep dive by noting that 88% of local mobile searches result in a same-day decision, usually because a frantic patient is staring at 3 options in that local pack.
Right.
But if AI is already intercepting 84% of medical searches, what happens when the search engine stops presenting patients with 3 options to choose from? What happens when it just acts as an ultimate single-answer matchmaker? Siri, My toddler has a rash. Okay, I book you with Dr. Park at 2 p.m.
Wow.
If an AI algorithm becomes the only patient a clinic needs to convince first, how will that fundamentally change the bedside manner of the entire medical internet?
That is the new frontier. We are rapidly moving from optimizing for human discovery to optimizing for an algorithmic gatekeeper.
And it all starts with making sure your digital house is in order so the gatekeepers actually trust you with the keys. Thanks for joining us on this deep dive.